first case this morning is 522-0254, Totten, etc. versus Bergener, etc. Arguing for the appellant is James Myers. Arguing for the appellee is Kara Wade. Each side will have 15 minutes for their argument. The appellant will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please note only the clerk is permitted to record these proceedings.
Good morning.
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 Mr. Myers, or if you're prepared to go, you may begin.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, my name is James Richard Myers, and I represent Billy Bergener in this matter, who is the appellant. On appeal, Mr. Bergener has raised three issues. I'm going to address those here today in reverse order as they appear in our brief. And if at any time the justices have questions, I'd be happy to answer those. But the first issue I want to address today is the Uniform Partition of Heirs Property Act and its application to this case. This issue is before you under statutory interpretation, which means that the standard of review is de novo. I also, as you all may know, the Uniform Partition of Heirs Property Act is relatively new. It's relatively new in all the jurisdictions it's been enacted in. There's about 20 or 21. And I looked when I did my brief, and I looked the other day, and I don't find any case that addresses really in any way the issue that we've raised today about interpretation of that statute. I wish I could find one, but I haven't been able to do it. The facts that apply to this particular argument are undisputed and are in the record. The Uniform Partition of Heirs Property Act became effective August 23rd, 2019. The complaint in this cause for was filed after that, September 5th, 2019. So the act was in effect. And in her complaint, Carolyn requested a division of property, and if any part thereof cannot be made without manifest prejudice to the parties, the same or such parts that cannot be divided be sold. That was in her verified complaint that back in September of 2019.
Was there a subsequent pleading?
There was a subsequent pleading. The record reflects that an agreement was made to allow an amended counterclaim to be filed by Carolyn. And she in fact did that. And in that amended counterclaim, she changed her prayer for relief to take out the fact that she wanted the sale. We objected to that portion of it and ruled. And so there is an amended claim on file. Our position is that the verified pleading is already a judicial admission and can't be changed. And B, even if it is changeable, the statute says if you request it, if any party requested a sale. And so whether she changed it or not, she actually requested a sale in her initial pleading. And so under the statute, because she requested a sale, the buyout provisions, Section 7 of the Uniform Property Act would still apply.
So your position is that even though she's filed an amended complaint, that amendment, which would normally supersede anything that it follows, it doesn't have that effect in this case?
Again, I believe that the first pleading was verified, and so then those things become judicial admissions and are part of the record a further amendment to a pleading. But second, I don't think that the fact she changed it matters, because the statute reads, if any party requested a sale, then the buyout provisions apply. And whether she changed it or not, she originally requested a sale. Back to what I was saying then, the amendment order, March 7th, 2022 is when the parties March 3rd of 2022 is when the parties finally entered an agreed order as to value. And if you read the statute, that's when the Section 7 buyout provisions become triggered. Once the parties agree to value, or the judge determines the value, or the value is determined through commissioners, however that's determined, the time we look at is after the date that the value becomes part of the record, and that's what happened on March 3rd. And thereafter, we requested that we be given this notice to buy out and were denied. The statute doesn't contemplate any further notice to anybody. The values are set and then the buyout provisions are triggered. There is no set the value and then ask everybody again or ask anybody for the first time whether they want a sale or not. What it says, once the values are determined, section 6 is under section 7, if any party requested a sale, then those buyout provisions are triggered and the buyout provisions would apply. I'd like to move on to the second issue, both today and in the order in the brief, and that's the Marlin Bergener's will and the interpretation of it. A portion of this property subject to this case came to the parties through Marlin Bergener's will. And Marlin Bergener's will contained provisions related to buyout provisions, partition, and farming. And again, this issue comes to you under will interpretation, which is a de novo review. And the line in that, in the trial court, simply issued an order after hearing argument that said this language is precatory and doesn't restrict partition. No explanation, no nothing. So we have no idea what the trial court was looking at, but it appeared that to me anyway, that they were looking at the single sentence, which is, it is my desire that no partition of my real estate shall be made during the lives of my said nephew and niece, the nephew and niece being the parties here, Billy and Carolyn.
And the court interpreted that word desire to mean that it was a wish and not a requirement of his, hers, correct?
Assuming that the order didn't have explanation, just said it was precatory.
And I believe your opponent's brief sets that out in some detail. Do you have a response to that?
I do. I see, as a matter of fact, that if this was the only sentence in the will, it is precatory. But this is not the only sentence in the will. And one of the elements one of the factors in interpretation of these wills is that the testator's intent be fulfilled and that no portion of the directives be rendered moot. And so if you look at this in the context that it's in, there's this paragraph is the last sentence of a paragraph that describes a provision where one of the parties can buy out another party should they ever want to sell, which is basically what partition does. And then following that is this precatory sentence, which we believe that if you interpret that whole paragraph, it clearly shows an intent that if either of these parties wants to dispose of their interest in this real estate, then they have a mechanism to do that. And if you say that this sentence then makes it so that you can just have a partition, then there's those provisions have no effect because you'll file a partition and there'll be a sale or a division in kind and the buyout provisions are meaningless. Further, we say that the following paragraph allows Billy or Carolyn or any family member to farm if the other family members don't farm. And again, that's rendered moot if there's no partition. And in fact, there's no advantage to a partition if after the fact, Billy Bergener's, because that there's clearly not precatory that sentence. So Billy Bergener's gonna have the right to farm this land should Carolyn wind up with it. And so that those two sentences and the two paragraphs together show an intent that this not be partitioned and that if one of the parties wants out of the city, they have that being the mechanism set forth. I would also note that the Indiana case, which is the, I'm sorry, I lost the name. It's the Indiana case that's cited by the Dwyer versus Allen, cited by Appellee from Indiana, has the same sentence. And again, I concede if that was the only sentence in there, I desire that my property not be partitioned, but that will, if you look at it, has a paragraph before that sentence that talks about Bob gets this 3 acres and niece gets this, and little Joey gets another life estate, and it basically divides the property up and then says, I don't want a partition. That's a wholly different circumstance where we have a paragraph that says, if either of these people want out of this co-tenancy arrangement, they have a means to do that. They can be bought out by the other at this price and this formula, followed by the sentence, it is my desire that the property not be partitioned. And we think that's different because if you read that whole paragraph, it is clear that Marlon did not want a partition. What he wanted, should these desire to get out of a co-tenancy, is that this buyout provision be followed.
So correct me if I'm wrong, I may have this confused with another similar case that we have on the docket today, but I think the appellee's brief set out a string of citations for cases that interpret, that precatory language. Do you recall that?
I don't recall that. That doesn't mean it didn't exist. But again, I don't have a dispute. These are all different cases. Every will is written in no case that says how to interpret a will written like this. We have general rules. And I agree that if the only sentence in the will was, I desire that my property not be partitioned, that's precatory. But this sentence follows a detailed buyout provision that allows these people to sever their co-tenancy should they choose to and avoid. And so we believe that if you read that in context, that there was no desire that this be partitioned on the part of Marlon, which is what we're supposed to determine Marlon's intent, that buyout provision, the two or three sentences about the buyout, are rendered meaningless if a partition is allowed, because nobody would do it. They would simply say, I'm not doing that, Marlon, even though you set that up for me, thank you. I'm just going to file for partition and avoid the whole thing.
And I apologize. I didn't mean to throw you off there. Looking at the appellee's brief now, there's two sites that deal with the precatory language, one being a Fourth District case and then the other being the one you mentioned, the Indiana case. So it wasn't necessarily a long line of cases cited. It was just two. So I apologize if I threw you off on that.
No, you didn't throw them. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying. I'd like to turn, if I could, to the last issue we have on appeal, which is the distribution issue. The trial court, this is a issue that you have to review on a manifest weight of the evidence standard. The record shows that evidence submitted on the value of four or five parcels as a whole. A hearing was held before any suggestion was made that the trial court may split those parcels up. The trial court then split parcels up by severing 8 acres out of approximately 117 acres and saying that that should go to the other party. And the trial court placed a value on that. And we've submitted court that there is, and we submitted to the trial court, that there's no basis for the valuation of that 8 acre severed property. You can't just take 8 acres, 17, and say that, that's the value. That doesn't work. You have to look at the actual 8 acres and determine what its value is. And even today, the boundaries of that 8 acres aren't established. There's a rough description of it in the trial court's order, but it's never established. And I don't know how you would even have someone value a 8 acre parcel that we don't know the boundaries to yet. And so without evidence of value for the acres, the trial court has to be against the manifest way of the evidence, because there is no.
So there's no indication in the record anywhere that the trial court assigned a value to those 8 acres based on some formula, some appraisal or anything of that nature?
Not to my recollection. The order says I assign a value of $4,200 an acre to this parcel, which is actually, it's actually a different number than if you just took the amount of acres and divided it by, or the total value divided by the number of acres. It's actually different from that. And so I don't have any way to tell you how the trial court determined that.
Assuming that their valuation of the of those 8 acres was accurate, overall, it looks like the trial court tried to divide it monetarily so that both parties were close to equal. And you're suggesting that that was not the intent of the will maker, as well as not the best way of doing this because of the farming operation. Is that correct?
Our position is that this is also against the manifest weight of the evidence to give Carolyn the 40 acres that was given to her, because it would invite future litigation. It is across the street from Billy Bergner's farm operation, and it has many common boundaries with other property owned by Billy Bergner, and he's the farmer and she's not, and so it doesn't make any common sense to give her that property when there's other properties available. Plus, there's another tract of real estate that's exactly equal to what Billy Bergner got. That's what this will say, that Billy Bergner gets this tract, Carolyn gets another tract of real estate or money of the same value. And there's a tract that's exactly equal in value. I don't know why you wouldn't give her that tract, but again, I'm not the trial court. But I do think that the trial court is correct that we need an equal value of all the assets. And his order does do that in the long run, but the fact that the 8 acres is valued with no basis makes it against the manifest way of the evidence.
Okay, Mr. Myers, I know I've asked several questions. I know your time is up, so you want to just give a very, very brief closing statement, and then you'll have time in rebuttal.
Your Honor, I'm good. I think I've explained my position, and you can move on, and I'll just save it for rebuttal.
I appreciate that. Thank you
for the opportunity.
Judge McKinney, Judge Welch, do you have any questions for Mr. Myers before we move on?
No questions.
All right, thank you. Ms. Wade, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court and counsel. I'm going to actually address the issues kind of in the opposite order of Mr. Meyer. I would initially point out, just as a housekeeping matter, that I had filed a motion to strike the reply brief filed by the appellant. There's been some issues throughout this appeal with the appellant actually complying with the rules that govern the appeal. His initial brief was late. He didn't seek an extension in time. This court still graciously allowed him to file the brief, even though the extension was not timely. However, they did issue an order basically indicating that he needed to follow the rules of the Supreme Court. And then we get to the reply brief. And again, it's not the brief is not timely. It's filed a week late. There's no motion for extension or leave of the court to file the late reply. And therefore, I felt like it was necessary to bring that to the court's attention and ask that it be stricken. In response, the appellant has filed a now pending motion for extension, asking that the late reply be accepted. I would indicate that after being admonished that the rules matter and they need to follow them, they should have done what they need to do. And so I would ask that reply be stricken.
All right, we will take that into consideration when we make our ruling on the case.
Thank you, Judge. Now moving to the merits. First, talking about the distribution plan under Mary. There's a lot of M words in this case. We got Mary, we got Marlon, we got Myron. So Mary is the mother of the parties to this case. And through her trust, it does require an equal distribution. It required that Billy received a particular tract, which is where he lives and his farm is located on it. And then it said Carolyn was supposed to receive an equal value tract or money, and then everything else was supposed to be divided equally. And that's exactly what the court did here. It did divide everything equally. Justice Barber pointed that out. And Mr. Myers argues that Carolyn should have got the $183,000 tract, and she did as part of the distribution. The judge did give her that.
What's the other tract that is of equal value to what the brother got?
Judge, I actually have the order in front of me. I can tell you. There were five tracts total, right, according to the Bergner appraisal. So Carolyn received tract one, which is in equal value, and tract two, track 3A, which is the one that's really in contention here, and then the 8-acre parcel of track 4, which is also an issue. How the judge arrived at the analysis is that he gave her the larger value tract 3A, the portion of that that equaled the value of the tract that Billy got, and then awarded her the remainder of that value as part of the equal distribution. So, I mean, it's really neither here nor there. I mean, the end result is the same. And certainly there's no prohibition that a trust to divide anything out or how, there's no prohibition, there's no instruction. It just says equal. And the court complied with that, the settler's intent, whenever he came up with this distribution plan. Now, I'm making these assertions, Judge, but in reality, it's kind of hard to tell exactly what the court considered. Not hard, almost difficult, because the appellant did not provide a record here. There was an evidentiary hearing on February 11th of 2021. Evidence was presented. There's no transcript of this proceeding. There's no bystander's report. I wasn't involved in the proceeding at that time, so I can't even tell you what really happened. I'm flying blind just like the court is, and that's a problem. The rules require that an adequate record be provided for this court to consider what evidence the court considered, the trial court considered, and there's no record here. Under the case law cited in my brief, the Fouch versus O'Brien case, it's a Supreme Court case. In the absence of a sufficient record on appeal, it is presumed that the order entered by the trial court was in conformity with the law and had a sufficient factual basis. Thus, in the absence of a transcript or a bystander's report, the reviewing court must assume the trial court heard sufficient evidence to support its decision unless the record indicates otherwise. We don't know the record. Mr. Myers just made several statements about, you know, inviting litigation and 3A is located across from 3B. I'm assuming those issues were addressed in the testimony provided by Carolyn and her husband, Doug, and perhaps the testimony provided by Billy, but we don't know because there was no transcript. There's no bystander's report. I don't know what they testified to, and neither does this court. So we don't know the evidence that the trial court considered. However, if you look at the docket, I agree with Mr. Myers, there were appraisals filed. It's clear from the order that the court adopted the appraisal submitted by Carolyn, the Bergner appraisal, because it was done at the time of Mary's death. So he did take the value, and Mr. Myers is correct, the value that he used for that 8-acre parcel is a little higher than the appraised value, but there's reasons for that. Tract 4 is mostly wooded. The portion that's given to Carolyn is tillable, so it has more value to it. The reason that was given to her is because tract 1 is located adjacent to tract 4 and is farmed with that 8-acre piece, about 8 acres. So it's farmed together as one tract, so that's why the court wanted to keep it together. That's reasonable. Again, though, you can't really make – I know that because I'm familiar with the case now. There's nothing in the record for this court to look at to really determine these things because the appellate didn't provide it. So I'm telling you that this is why the trial court did what it did. But there's no transcript. There's no bystander's report. Therefore, the appellant has the burden here, and he didn't provide a sufficient record for this court to really consider the arguments that he's raised with respect to count one. So I would ask that the trial court, on that basis alone, be affirmed, but also for the reasons I discussed. If you look at the appraisal that is part of the record, it does talk about the wooden nature of tract four and why the court arrived at a little higher price for that acreage because of the tillable nature of that ground given to Carolyn.
Was that just, in your opinion, is that just the trial court making an assumption, playing amateur appraiser on what farm ground is worth there?
Judge, I wish I could tell you. I don't know the evidence that was presented. I know that Carolyn and her husband, Doug, who are very familiar with the properties, provided testimony explaining the values that they thought it had. I assume that Mr. Bergner provided similar testimony, but I can't tell you. There's no transcript. There's no bystander's report. I'm not exactly sure what was told to the judge, and neither are you, because there's no transcript. There's no bystander's report. So those are things that my prior counsel, who's now state's attorney for our county, told me those things were told. I assume those things were told to the judge, but I don't know. I can't prove it one way or the other. So that's why I know I'm making a big deal of this, but it is a big deal. I mean, there's no record. How are you supposed to decide something when there's no record? So I would ask that, again, because the appellate has not met its burden, that the trial court order with respect to the distribution be upheld. Turning quickly to the second issue, the interpretation of Marlon's will. I want to point out that Mr. Myers characterized this, the language in Mr. Marlon's will as saying that if they wanted to defeat or overcome the joint tenancy, that's not what's said in the will. The remainder of the provisions talk about if they want to sell their interest. They want to sell their interest. So there's some mandatory language in there about if you're going to sell it, if you're no longer going to own it, if it's going to go outside the family, you have to offer it to one another. That's reasonable. The language about the partition is precatory because it's still keeping the farm in the family. They're just dividing who owns it. It doesn't mean it's being sold. And I'll get to the third topic, but Carolyn has never asked for this to be sold. She doesn't want to sell it. She wants to keep it.
Now let's stop there. What did she ask for in her prayer for relief in her first amended or her first complaint?
Well, Judge, Mr. Myers touched on that, and we're kind of skipping ahead, but the original complaint was filed under the General Partition Act. It's in the Code of Civil Procedure. And the standard language from the Partition Act is an alternative relief request. It's, I want it divided in kind, which was her request. I want it divided in kind, but in the alternative, if it cannot be divided, then the court can sell it. So it's an alternative relief.
Is it a requirement for the alternative to be pled?
It's standard language from the Partition Act, Judge.
Is it required to be in there? I mean, is it a problem if it's not in there?
I don't believe so. I believe you can pick one or the other. Here, though, and if you had an adequate record in front of you, you'd know, Judge, Carolyn has never, ever really wanted to sell this property. That was a prayer for relief where, as attorneys, we include that language because that's what we included with every partition action. That's not her actual desire. And she's testified about that numerous times in this case, and she's indicated it in numerous hearings. I don't want to sell the property. I want it to be partitioned in kind. If you had a record in front of you, you'd know that. And again, it's an alternative. And he's ignoring the fact that the alternative hasn't been met. It's only if you can't partition it in kind. This can be partitioned in kind. And again, as you pointed out, going to that issue, we amended, we replaced that. Whenever we figured out, the Heirs Property Act is new. It's a new law. We filed a new amended count to comply with the requirements of the Heirs Property Act. And we removed any reference to a sale. And we did that before any buyout rights are triggered under the act. So first of all, it's withdrawn. So it's no longer there. That's the first issue. So we've withdrawn that to the extent it was a request. It's not a request. She's throughout this entire case has said, I want to be partitioned in kind. And then to the, as Mr. Myers pointed out, there's not a lot of case law on this. So there's no prohibition in the act that an initial request can't be withdrawn or rescinded. To the extent it's considered a request, which I don't agree it's a request. It was an alternative prayer for relief. But to the extent that it was a request, it was withdrawn and it was rescinded before any buyout rights were triggered under Section 6 of the Heirs Property Act. So it's just that the argument, he's desperately trying to force Carolyn to sell this because then the provisions in Marlon's will are triggered. And she's stuck with that $1,500 an acre. So that would not, that just right there supports the idea that this would not be reasonable for Carolyn to do it because she'd have to sell it for a bare bones amount. She never wanted to partition it. That was just language in there according to the initial Partition Act. And it was replaced and withdrawn. So that's why that argument fails. Going back to Marlon's will, again, the provision at issue is precatory because she's not wanting to sell the property. She's wanting it to be partitioned. And the particular language is, it is my desire that no partition of my real estate shall be made during the lives of my said niece and nephew. And when you compare that with the language that Mr. Myers points out relating to the sell, it only clarifies and confirms that it's precatory versus mandatory. That has language like shall and cannot. This has, it is my desire. Those are different. And that, I'm going to butcher this case's name, the Fourth District case, the Sickage, C-I-C-K-Y-J case, 93 LF 3D 556 in the Fourth District. it has similar desire language, and the Fourth District found that that was precatory and not mandatory.
How do you address, how do you respond to Mr. Meyer's argument with regard to, you know, when you take in that sentence in context with the rest of the will, what else do we have that supports, you know, partition is something that is desired in any way?
Well, I think I was mentioning, so the other portion that he's asking you to look at are these this prohibition or these kind of first option rights if they want to sell the property. And it says that if you're going to sell it, you have to offer it to one another for a bottom dollar price of $1,500 an acre. And that's not what's being requested here. They're not asking to sell a property. They're not taking the property outside the family, which is evident that Marlin's intent was to keep the farm in the family. They're asking that it be simply divided. And it may be true that Carolyn has to allow Billy to farm the grand when she finally owns it individually. But that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be partitioned. I mean, clearly, this is only until they pass Billy and Carolyn. And so future generations would have to be dealing with this. And so there's no reason why this precatory language would prevent them from going ahead and addressing this now for her future children, so they don't have to deal with this. So it's again, that talks about selling. She's not selling, she's partitioning. She's simply dividing out. And there's no evidence, by the way, that they can't be divided in kind. It absolutely can. So to the extent that the other language is considered by this court, it's only, well, first of all, I think I've stated already, it does have mandatory language. So it is mandatory versus precatory. But secondly, it talks about sale. It doesn't talk about ending the co-tenancy as in, you know, you're getting it out of the family. It just talks about if you're going to try to sell it, this is what you have to do. So the partition, you're not taking it outside the family. You're just having family members own it individually. Does that address your question, Judge?
Yes, thank you.
So just in sum, I believe that none of the trial court got all three of these issues correct. There's a little record for this court to confirm that, and that is based on the failure of the appellant. And as a result, the trial court's order should be upheld.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Myers, you have time in rebuttal, or reply, I should say.
Thank you. I just have three quick points that I'd like to make and probably won't even use the whole time.
Okay, well, let me direct or just ask you to address what counsel pointed out as some failures with regard to the briefing, the timing, and the lack of record in this case.
Yes, Your Honor. It is true we didn't file our brief in time. We did request our original brief. We did request an extension and received that gracefully. And I believe that's common. I know I failed to request the extension before the brief was due, but it's common to give extensions. And then on the reply, as I said in my filing, that was my fault. I miscalendered the wrong day off by a week, and that's what happened. I don't have an excuse other than that. The reply only addresses two of the issues, of course, and it's true whether I filed the reply or not, that those things are true. And I don't believe any prejudice came in. And based on my 1 week failure, that's my response to you.
And in regard to the lack of record for us to review this case with?
Yes, there was no court reporter at the evidentiary hearing that took place about before the trial court that made the ruling. There was an evidentiary hearing before a prior judge, which the transcript of that is in the record. And Miss Carolyn herself testified about where Billy lived and where these properties were located. There is evidence in the form of exhibits showing you where they are and what properties are by them. So there is evidence in the record of those things. And then the important thing to look at in this case, as far as the 8-acre issue that we raise, is that both appraisals are in the record and no appraiser testified. So I mean, the evidence of what those appraisers had to say is right before you. There was nothing else said by those appraisers. And both parties submitted briefs that asked for division of the property by tract. No party suggested that any of these tracts could be divided or should be divided in smaller parts. That only came after the evidence you're hearing that we don't have a transcript for, when the trial court,
if there were no transcript because of, you know, not having a court reporter, isn't it, you're able to file a bystander's report
That's correct. But my suggestion is that the evidence that you need is in the record, regardless of the submission of a bystander report, in the fact that those appraisals are there and no party requested division of these tracts. It was only after the evidentiary hearing that the trial court suggested that it could be divided up. And so there would be no opportunity or reason to have any evidence of what a sub birth. Plus, the tract we're talking about isn't even defined yet. I don't know how you would ever have evidence of value of a tract that's not defined. So I think that you don't have a transcript of that hearing, but you have ample evidence in the record already that those appraisers testified exactly how they testified in their submitted appraisal, because they never actually did testify, and that the judge created this scheme of division after the evidence you're hearing. And that's the first time that any suggestion that a tract divided came about. It is simply untrue that Carolyn never requested a sale. She did in a verified pleading she filed in the case. She didn't have to request a sale, and she did. Whether she wants to believe she didn't want a sale or not, there's a pleading on file under her verified signature that requests a sale if the property can't be divided in kind. And that, under the old Partition Act, which still exists, which is the only Partition Act that was around when Marlin did this will, it is simply not true that if you file a partition, it's going to remain in the family. If you file a Partition Act action under the old rules, and there was no possibility that it could be divided in kind, it went to a public sale where anybody could buy it, family member or not. And so it would make perfect sense for Marlin to provide a way that a co-tenancy can be severed that keeps the property in the family, which was his intent, and say, we can't have a partition because A, I've already created a way that these tenancies can be severed, and B, if we have a partition under the old act, it is entirely possible that there's a public sale and outsiders buy. That was really the harm that the new Partition Act, the Heirs Property Act, was intended to fix. I see my time's expired. Thank you.
Okay, any questions, Judge McKinney, Justice Welch?
No questions.
Okay, thank you both for your arguments today. The court will take the matter under consideration and issue its ruling in due course.